Jimenez drives that one to the deep center field. That's going to send Elmora back. Track, wall, gone! Two-run homer, Eloy Jimenez, number 16, 2-0 White Sox.
Well, the Blackhawks are now scoring in bunches. Last six games, they have scored 28 goals. All comes to the tweaks that Jeremy decided to make in the defensive zone, packing one fewer guy there.
I think they sent me up to cover the Wednesday, Thursday open locker room. No woman had ever walked in that locker room. I didn't know that. And it took years until Jim Harbaugh was brought out to talk to me, and he says, "Why is she sitting out there?" And I laughed because it took a player that said she should be in there.
707 on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for being with us. It's Andrea Darlis. Welcome to Andrea and the Reporters. We have tonight the voices that you just heard. Three sports veterans who have been covering sports in Chicago for 30 years, probably more than that, not to date all of us, but more than 30 years apiece. They are the voices of Cheryl Ray Stout, Chris Bowden, and Andy Mazur. You guys, thank you so much for being in studio tonight.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
This is
veterans.
Awesome.
Veterans.
You are veterans. We're old. It's okay.
That's the soft word to use for old folk. Of course, I tweeted it out too. Using
did you say? Did you say that too?
I said,
the veterans.
Radio sports veterans.
That hurt
day.
Just a little bit.
How about we get better with age?
Yeah.
How about that?
Okay.
We're like,
I'll buy it.
We're like fine wine. Exactly. I have to say, you three, I would say, are among those who have some of the most coveted jobs in Chicago in sports journalism, sports broadcasting, play-by-play, baseball and hockey experts. You three, to me, are the best in the biz when it comes to sports. And I'm not just saying that because I'm good friends with three of you. So
back at you.
The check is in the mail.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Thanks,
good. That's what I'm hoping for anyway.
Pizza's on the way.
Well, it's an honor. It's a pleasure to work with you guys. I can't wait to hear your backstories, stories that you've covered, just your aha moments, you know, how long you've been doing this. We were going to do a segment. Chris wanted to do something on first salaries, which is always quite laughable, especially to our young producers and interns who think, wait, what?
Yeah.
You made $4 an hour? Well, no, after taxes, it came to $3.63 an hour, right?
Right.
All right. Now, none of you needs an introduction, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Chris Bowden, you are our Hawks analyst here on WGN Radio. You've been at Fox, BBM, CLTV, WMVP, BBM, WCRX.
It's easier to list the places I haven't been.
Right, exactly. Andy Mazur has been with us forever. You work for the San Diego Padres here, Channel 9, CLTV, MAQ, the old MAQ.
Right.
BBM, and Cheryl Ray Stout. You've been in Chicago sports radio since 1979. MAQ, MVP, CBR, currently on WBEZ. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's our show. I've taken up enough time with all the... Do you guys remember the first story that y'all ever covered?
Ben Wilson's murder was one of the big ones.
Oh!
Yeah, that was a tough one.
That was a tough one.
That one was the one that kind of went right into your heart. Mm-hmm. Because here was the high school player of the country gets gunned down by Simeon High School.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one that, and it's like the anniversaries now, you know, and you go, oh gosh, you're heartbroken.
Yeah.
And there was no reason, it was senseless. It was, you know, it was a couple of gang members that murdered him. And you get your feet wet with that. It just kind of shakes you for a while.
Boy, it's a hard first story to cover. How about you, Mason?
Yeah, my first year here was in 1999. I started in January of 99, and it was right after the NBA strike was ending and the Bulls were being dismantled.
Oh.
So one of the first stories I covered was up there. And then I went to the Michael Jordan retirement press conference that was at the United Center.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 months later, I'm in spring training, and Kerry Wood blows out his arm.
Oh.
So I'm thinking, man, what did I just sign up for, right? And it was that same year that Walter Payton passed away, and it was just a weird November because Don Baylor was hired as the manager of the Cubs that afternoon.
Oh, jeez!
And then we found out that Walter had passed away, and then there was a big ceremony at Soldier Field. I know you were there.
Yeah.
And to listen to all the speaking and to listen to, especially Dan Hampton, I mean, the way that he came up to the microphone and was just being himself and talking about his great teammate that Chicago had lost. And then I remember getting into my car, driving up to Green Bay because they had a game the next night. And it was the game that Brian Robinson blocked a Ryan Longwell field goal at the end of the game to preserve a 14-13 win for the Bears that day. So it was a really weird first year for me here. A lot of stuff that went on.
I always think all of your minds, and Chris, I want to hear the first story you ever covered too, but I just think sports broadcasters, your minds are sharp as tacks. I mean, I'll be talking to Mazur, I'll be talking to Bowden in the hallway, and they're like, yeah, remember that game? Remember a game four of, you know, in 1982?
Uh-huh. Sports nerds. That's what we are.
Seriously. But that, I think, is such a skill. It's almost like you have photographic memories when it comes to sports scores, and it's a gift.
Yeah. We're not less. We're not quite less status.
No, I think that's amazing.
We're less than less.
But I think he makes that stuff up. He just says it really authoritatively.
Yeah.
I've caught a few times not being right.
Yeah. All right, Bowden, your first.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there was one in particular. I just remember being at Columbia in the early 80s and getting onto that radio station right away and wanting to push to get into as many things as possible, not only myself, but the other people who are on our sports staff at the radio station, and asking teams, the professional sports teams, if they would let us college kids come in and cover games. And some teams were more open than others to doing it. I know the Cubs would let us in every once in a while. So I started out while I was in college interning, obviously working for the radio station. I work for a place called Sports Phone.
Oh, I remember that.
Back in the early 80s, which is kind of a precursor to the internet, and there is a long list of guys whose names people know right now who started out at that place.
It was recorded, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of times it would be, people could call up and they could get us live too at certain points. Whoa. So it was a dial-up number where
976-1313.
You would give scores.
Is that what it was?
976-1313. What's that?
Dick Gansky?
I was kind of in the second wave there. Gansky was the guy who kind of got things started, but yeah, Luke Kanellis, Jeff Joniak were there. David Schuster was there at my time.
George Offman,
Fred Huebner. A bunch of guys. It was just kind of like a breeding ground. And at the same time, while you were all enjoying it there, and it was kind of a popular place for those who were kind of a step below those on the air, on TV, and radio at the time, it was also kind of like a competition. Like, okay, when the next job opening comes up, which one of us is going to get it? It was kind of doggy dog, cutthroat type thing. But we were all real friendly about it. Everyone kind of had the same goals. A lot of us have ended up being, fortunate enough to get a pretty long run in this business.
I always notice between sportscasters or between sports journalists, it is almost a friendly competition. I mean, you guys are all friends with each other. I remember listening to you, Chris, on BBM, and then when you came here, everyone was like, yeah, we finally got Bowden. I mean, this is, seriously. I mean, so it is almost like a respect amongst sports journalists that you have
it's
for each other.
It's better now than when I first started. No, it wasn't good for me.
It was not. No, well, probably being a female pioneer.
And being the first one doing it, because I had to deal more with print people.
Okay.
Who did not want me to be around them, did not want me in the locker room, would challenge me all the time. And, I just fought through it. I came from a family of 9 kids. You don't think I had some fights going on?
Oh, my God, right?
But it made me better. Like, even the guys I worked with, when I started working with Chet Kopic and Jerry Cook at MAQ Radio to do his show, they did something kind of interesting. They had me call a head coach to talk to him. And I did that. Well, it turned out that the guy was a philanderer. And so his wife answered the phone, and she grilled me.
Oh.
And it was nasty.
What do you want?
Exactly. That's what she said.
Oh, sure.
And it was very nasty.
Chet, get over here.
Yeah. I handled it. But what I learned from that was, okay, next time I called anybody, a player, a manager, I knew the wife's name. I knew how many kids they had.
Mm-hmm.
I would have a conversation. And then it got easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was getting them on my side mm-hmm. when I wanted something. Mm-hmm. And I broke some stories that way, too.
Does it make it hard? I mean, because I know you've been doing this for so long. Does it make it hard when you're friends with some of the players? I mean, do you still have to separate yourself?
Yes.
Or is it like, oh, hey, we're going to...
As long as you're truthful, you're balanced, they'll understand. I don't make anybody my friend as I'm covering them, but we become friends after they've left. And that's the way I've done it with a few guys, because I don't want to be their friends,
mm-hmm.
because that's not my job. My job is to do the story, find out, what they're about, what they did right or wrong, and report it that way.
Does it make it hard when there is a controversy surrounding a player, like a Michael Vick or fill in the blank? I mean, any sort of, sports.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be real careful. I mean, when I was first here covering the Cubs and traveling, I was younger. I mean, I was kind of a contemporary of some of these guys that I can actually, you know, relate with, and you know, we'd have some things in common. And it just was natural because they'd see me all the time to, you know, to gravitate towards me if I was in the locker room, because I was on the plane with them, I was in the hotels and at all the games. So it kind of happened that way. But, you know, as I've gotten a little older, and when I went to San Diego, it was a little less contemporary. And, you know, when I'm with the White Sox, it's a little even less than that. So you have a hard time trying to find that common ground other than the baseball game itself and things that you want to talk to them about around baseball. So you do have to be careful, though, because there'll be those guys that I thought you were my friend. You know, I thought, you know, you can't. Well, you know, if the truth is the truth. I mean, you have to tell everybody what the truth is. And if they're, quote unquote, your friend, they're going to understand that you have to do your job while they're doing theirs.
Right. You're still telling a story. Yeah. It's Andy Mazur, Chris Bowden, Cheryl Raced out here on Andrea and the Reporters. Quick break, and back after this on WGN. It's Andrea and the Reporters. Tonight we are talking sports and sports journalism with Chris Bowden, Andy Mazur, and Cheryl Raced, all in studio. Did you all know that you always wanted to be in sports? Or wanted to be in sports journalism?
I was in theater for a long time, but I also I played sports. Unfortunately, Title IX happened the year after I graduated from high school. So I went to Columbia College eventually, and I got my and I wanted to do sports, and I was able to do it on the radio station there, and then I was able to get an internship and a couple of places, and then I landed WMAQ radio, and they had just started getting some sports teams. They got the White Sox, then they got NFL, and then they got the Bulls. And that's when I was able. And then they developed some sports talk shows that I helped create, develop, and then I got to do it that way. So my path was kind of strange, but I was a sports person as a kid.
Yeah.
Because with nine kids,
you have to, sure.
You got to do something.
Right.
But my grandfather,
field your own baseball team.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
My grandfather lived with us at the end of his life, and he was from Poland. And he was a huge baseball fan. And he delivered coal to Wrigley Field and Comiskey Park.
Oh, wow.
So he got me
That's
hooked
cool.
as a kid.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Okay, how about you guys?
I always wanted to be involved in sports. If I couldn't make it as a professional athlete, which I kind of figured out in high school that wasn't going to happen, I still wanted to be around it. And even as a kid, I was one of those nerds who would tune into all the 5, 6, and 10 on TV and watch the guys that, I almost idolized the people on the air more than I idolized the athletes themselves after some point, you know, and I always knew that was going to kind of be my backup plan. So when high school rolls around, the senior year rolls around, the scholarship offers aren't coming in. So yeah, I kind of saw that coming by sophomore or junior year. And I knew that was going to be the route I wanted to take, because I wanted to stay around sports in some way or another. And this was the easiest way to do it. It's better than an assembly line.
Yeah, I'm just glad my parents are not here right now, because they would not dispute this, but they would be turning their heads because they've heard the story about 8,000 times, as they told me. But you know, when I was really young, my dad would put me on his lap and we'd watch baseball, and a lot of it was on WGN. And of course, Jack Brickhouse was a guy that I really admired from knee high to till the day he died. And I kind of had an idea that was what I wanted to do. I would walk around the house with Tinker Toys and Lincoln Logs as a microphone, and people would run from me. So it was nice that I had that ability to chase people away even at that age. But I discovered, too, curveball was pretty much the end-all, be-all, that I could not do what I wanted to do and be a professional baseball player. So I figured, why not, you know, try to do it? Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate. I went to Maine East High School. We had a radio station there. I was able to get on even my freshman year, and did all 4 years pretty much sports there, some play-by-play, and went on to Bradley and did some things out there as well. And then, my path was weird, too, because I ended up doing things I never thought I would ever do. I was a top 40 DJ for like 5 years in Peoria. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I got to get on the air somehow, some way, and I figured that's probably the best way to do it.
Oh, sure.
And then, Jeff Joniak, we mentioned his name, and I know he's working for a competitor, but give him his due, because the guy took a chance on me in 1997, gave me an opportunity to do sports on WMAQ on the weekends. I was working 7 days a week for about 4 or 5 years, and it was just because you had to do it.
We all did that.
Yeah,
right?
You just had to do it. It was one of those things.
Was it cool with the different broadcasters, Brickhouse, Harry Carey, Ron Sano? I mean, people that you guys grew up listening to and wanting to emulate or wanting to have their career, and then you work alongside of him, of them, I should say.
Well,
so
you find out a lot about them, some good, some bad.
Right.
That story about meeting your heroes.
Yeah, you're going, oh, boy. It's very interesting.
Oh, right.
But I was really fortunate when I was at MAQ Radio when there was a situation where Del Crandall could not do a game. His son was graduating from high school or college in Milwaukee. And so they asked me, the station said, would you like to do the baseball game against the Sox and the Oakland A's? I go, wow, I never thought of that. So I did, except Loren Brown was the play-by-play guy. He refused to be in the booth with me, would not do it. So they asked Don Drysdale, who did it with me.
Oh,
now,
that's
for
cool.
me, to have Don Drysdale cool. rather than Loren Brown?
Right.
Any day.
Oh, good trade-off. Yeah.
That's okay, exactly.
Good trade-off. Yeah.
Chris, I think you have one of the toughest jobs because I think, personally, you have some of the hardest names to remember and to memorize, and you have to say them kind of quickly, too.
Yeah, after a while. Once you get it down, it's fairly easy. I could not do Weidman's job, that's for sure.
Right.
You know?
Oh, my gosh.
John, please stay healthy.
Yeah.
Because my predecessor, Judd, was a guy who was ready to jump in and do play-by-play at any point. So that's something I'm probably going to have to work on, but I always pray that John's healthy and he is good to go, because that's one fast moving game. I'd have to lean on Troy a whole lot. Probably my sign of things to come was when my dad took me to my first Cubs game in 1972, first time in a live game, and the game starts and I turned to my dad and I said, how come I can't hear Jack Brickhouse? So that was being at the game live. We weren't hearing the announcers.
Right.
I was expecting everyone to be hearing them, even at the game too. So that was probably my sign of things to come.
Do you still keep score at baseball games?
Yes, oh yeah,
I do.
Yeah. I have
to. Do you guys?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to.
It keeps you in the game.
Well, yeah.
No, when you're attending as a spectator.
Oh, yeah. A spectator. I don't do as much.
Yeah. Okay.
But, working.
Little transistor radios, remember?
Those were the best.
Back in the 70s?
Well, I grew up in the west side of Chicago, and we used to have transistor radios during the World Series. And you wore a long-sleeve shirt, you put transistor radio in your hand,
on the wire up. Yeah.
Looks
like Secret Service, right?
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, now? Oh, my gosh. Andy, you've done play-by-play. Mm-hmm. I marvel when I listen to you do play-by-play, because I admire all the color, all the play-by-play, but I really think you literally have to be watching every single second of that game. You can't turn away.
No.
Not even to take a breath.
No, and it's interesting too, because it does depend a lot on who you're doing your analyst work, because they have to be up there just kind of help you out a little bit. It was funny because you mentioned Weidman.
Yeah.
I had a chat with John in the booth in 2014 when I came back, and I was filling in for Judd during the mm-hmm. intermission mm-hmm. reports. And John says to me, he goes, your job is so hard, referring to what I was doing with the Padres. He goes, I would never be able to do a baseball game. You got all this time to fill. I'm like, I'm looking at him, said, are you crazy? I said, when there's a substitution in baseball, the umpire points up to the press box and the PA says, now batting for so-and-so is so-and-so. These guys are jumping over the boards in the middle of the play. I said, what are you crazy?
Right.
But that was an interesting conversation. I guess it's what you do is compared to what you don't do is the foreignness, the foreign nature of it.
There's time to fill on baseball.
No, it's the truth. It's the truth.
You have to really lean on that analyst to come up with stories.
And baseball is a radio sport.
It is.
It's not.
Amen.
TV is okay, but there's something about being able to do all paint that picture.
Paint the picture.
And
yes,
that's the beauty of it. And you could be in your car and you can understand what's going on.
Right.
You'd be painting your walls, and it's just something about it. It just fills your mind of the game.
Yeah, and hockey, I would almost argue that hockey is more of a radio sport too, only because I think we grew up, well, at least I grew up listening to hockey because you couldn't see it on TV.
Yeah, couldn't get it.
You couldn't see it on TV till
that's the best spectator
sport. 10 years ago? 15 years ago?
Yeah. Hockey's I agree with you.
You have to, to really embrace
be
that sport,
in that stadium.
You have to be in there.
Yeah.
I think that's the best sport.
Yeah. And John's the very best at what he does. I can't imagine doing what he does. And he's the very best. Just the way the names, seeing the guy, figuring out who it is, matching the number to the name without actually seeing the name, and the action is so fast-paced.
Yeah, and from your vantage point, too. It's not like you're exactly close to the ice. I mean, people forget that you guys are way up there.
Yeah, and in baseball, too. Well,
it's getting worse in baseball.
Your vantage points are, as they build the bigger stadiums.
Well, not
just
that.
The press boxes are down the line, and they're horrible conditions. We cannot see the pitches.
For working press at a lot of baseball games, and now even a lot of NFL stadiums, you're down in the corners, you're down the line. Thankfully, they have still allowed the play-by-play teams to be behind home plate for baseball. I'm ruined the day that changes, because you know, there are some stadiums where it's very difficult to call a game. I mean, where the Nationals play, you're literally miles in the air. I mean, you're way up. You cannot tell a ground ball from a line drive.
I used to love hearing there. Your stories about the different stadiums.
Oh, it's crazy.
And I know your favorite was Shea, right?
Oh, God. Ron Sando and I love Shea Stadium.
It was right next to what airport? Was
that would
it
be LaGuardia.
LaGuardia. Oh, worst airport in the world.
So when they knocked down Shea Stadium, Ronnie was still, he had, I think it was 2009 was the first year that they played. And I remember taking a picture because we were taking a tour. I was with the Padres. We opened up there. We were the first team to play the Mets in their new stadium. And they're showing us on this tour. And then there's the remnants of Shea Stadium. And it was literally laying in rubble.
Right.
And I thought, I got to take a picture of this. And I sent it to Matt Bowles. And I said, you've got to share this with Ronnie because this is exactly how he always wanted to see Shea Stadium in a pile of rubble.
He'll blow it up and put it on his fridge.
And as my text said to him, you know, Shea Stadium, may she rest in peace.
There you go. It's Andy Mazur, Chris Bowden, Cheryl Raystout. Quick break and more with these veteran sports broadcasters after this. WGN.
But so many times when you've seen him on these rushes in the first 14 games of his NHL career, he does a move and creates even more space for himself or pulls off a move where if a guy is right on him, he manages to find an open look for the goaltender.
And he looked at me and he said, Cheryl, he says, you love what you do, don't you? I said, I absolutely do. And he says, if you ever stop, you have to quit. I looked at him and I go, that's right, you did quit for, you know, 19 months. And I will never forget him telling me that. That was just quintessential Michael when he talked to me.
Swing and a miss, strike three, and game one is over. And the White Sox prevail with a 7-1 win over the Detroit Tigers. Win number 71 on the year for the White Sox, and win number 10 on the year for Reynaldo Lopez.
It's 732, 720 WGN. Andrea Darlis. It's Andrea and the reporters. Tonight we are talking all about sports with Chris Bowden, Andy Mazur, and Cheryl Ray Stout. All right, I have to ask you guys. I know this is probably the lob question or the softball question, but I ask it because everyone always gives me a different answer. What I think they're going to say, they don't end up saying. I'm going to ask you one of the most memorable and poignant sports stories that you ever covered. And I trust me, I know we have the book. You know, here's why, Andy, because like people always say, okay, what's the greatest news story you ever covered? And people think it's going to be like, oh, the Ryan trial or the Blagojevich trial, whatever my answer is going to be. But usually it's an answer that they're like, oh my God, you know, I didn't think that was so impactful to you and so memorable. And I know we have the three Stanley Cups. I know we have the Cubs World Series, the White Sox World Series in 2005. I know there's so many awesome sports stories, but for each of you individually and personally, what was just the story for you that you thought, God, I love what I do. This is the greatest job in the world.
Ladies first.
All right, Cheryl.
I was fortunate to be around Michael Jordan his whole career with the Bulls, and the story that I was able to break was about Michael Jordan playing baseball. And to have that story, were you working at AM 1000 at the time?
Boy, it's all.
Anyway,
it's all a
blur. So what happened was,
I think I was.
You were in Chicago.
Yes,
that's
what
we know.
Michael retires.
BBM.
Okay. BBM. Michael retires in '93. Before a White Sox game, that's when everything broke. It was a playoff game. I had somebody that gave me the information that Michael was going to play for the White Sox, and how I found, and I thought it was plausible because almost 2 years before that, Michael and I would have conversations before games, and I recorded. And he said to me, you love baseball. I go, I absolutely do. And he said, I'm going to play baseball when my career is over with. I said, Michael, you'll be in your 40s. You're not going to want to ride the buses. He goes, no, I am. So when he retired, a person that's connected to the White Sox and the Bulls came up to me and said, Michael's going to play baseball. And I had that connection from just a couple years ago. So I had to work my sources. And it took 2 weeks. And our sports director, Jim Modelski, gave me the 2 weeks. Only he and I knew about it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked my sources. I talked to Ron Shula. I went to a Christmas party. I kind of barged in. Can you tell me about it? And he said, I heard you talk. You're working on the stories. Yeah, he's working out here, but he's not telling me that he's going to be with the club. And I got other sources to tell me some information. I called up my source of security. She worked in security. And I said, when is Michael there? And she goes, well, about 10 o'clock. And then she paused. She goes, you didn't know that, did you?
Oh.
So it,
isn't it great
it
when you find stuff out like that?
It was one, you know, my heart's racing. And I'm trying to, you know, build the story to have everything in place. Because I'm dealing with the most famous athlete in the United States.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's safe to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all these, you know, people on the record, off the record. I called Herm Schneider, and he says, yes, he's here, he's working out, blah, blah, blah. But he wouldn't give me more specifics. So just before I was going to, you know, call Michael and Jerry Reinsdorf, there was a death in Jerry's family. So I said, okay, I'll wait. I get a phone call from my boss. He says, Jim Modowski says, somebody's talking on the other sports station saying that they've seen Michael Jordan walk in there, and they just poo-pooed it and said, oh, he's just having dinner or lunch with Jerry. That's it. You've got to go with the story now. You have everything there.
And you went with it?
I went with it. And
wow,
it was
what an awesome
the greatest
story.
Feeling.
Were you, when you found that out and when all of you guys found out, was anyone skeptical? Because I know the general public was.
See, I wasn't, because I knew we had that time to talk about it.
Yeah, and he'd always talked during his basketball career how much he really loved baseball growing up.
That was a sport with him and his dad.
Right.
That was their sport.
Right,
yeah,
right.
After his death.
And I did break the story when he came back to the NBA, too.
2001?
No, when he came back.
Oh, no, that was the retirement.
Yeah, 95.
I broke that story because I was at the Birdo where most of the media had left. And the curtain was down, and I'm listening. I'm going, that's a Michael Jordan practice. I knew it. I just knew it. And then I got a phone call from somebody down in Florida that he had walked out, that Michael had walked out of because it was a strike that was going on, and they wanted him to go from the minor league camp to the major league camp, and he wouldn't do that till he walked out. So I knew that. Then I had a friend of Scottie Pippen that I contacted. He said, yeah, Michael's here. He's here. You're right on that. So I'm like, okay, I called my station. I'm like, look, Michael's here. I know he's here. So afterwards, when they let us go into the floor, curtain comes up, we walk in there, we're talking to Phil, and I'm not saying anything to anybody else. So as Phil leaves to go up the steps, and the other few media that was there walked away, I go, Phil, Michael here? Yeah, how do you know? Just want to make
sure.
Had
a feeling.
And then
I got
B.J. Armstrong to go on the record and say, yes, he was here. So I called the station, but I said, look, I got it. I got the story. I'm on the air live when my beepers, when we had beepers, my beeper's going off. I've tossed it aside. Did the story, called back this friend of Scotty, and he said, I had Michael sitting here waiting for you.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's excellent. I love that. All right, you guys, most memorable stories.
I've been really lucky. You know, I covered the last three Bulls championships, the first two Stanley Cups, got in a ride on a bus with Jonathan Toews carrying the Stanley Cup through the streets of Chicago. But I think what I have to go back to is my very first road trip as a reporter was to New Orleans for Super Bowl 20. That's how old I am.
That was
so
cool.
That was my first road trip, a week in New Orleans with the 85 sure. Bears. And I covered that team straight out of college for Sports Phone, you know, because I graduated in 85, May of 85 or whatever it was. And then they went on that run being a part of that. So covering that Super Bowl team and being there when, they finally cracked the code. It was really bizarre at the start of my broadcasting career because as a kid, Chicago won nothing.
Yep.
And
right.
The first year I got some access to press boxes. White Sox let me in 83, and they win the division that year. I got in and covered the Cubs regularly in 84, and then the Bears thing happened in 85. And I guess the seminal moment out of that was the fact that, you know, it's no secret that Walter Payton was unhappy with the fact that he didn't get a chance to score a touchdown in the Super Bowl, which kind of took some of the luster off it for him personally. He was nowhere to be found afterwards.
No, I saw him. I saw him. He was not happy.
Yes. And he wasn't talking to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, as we were leaving the locker room, I saw him on the floor of the Superdome, the field, carrying Jarrett, who was a little toddler by then.
Wow.
And he hadn't spoken to anybody. I think myself and Bob Laguerre may have been the other person. I'm not sure. There was one other guy. But he wanted to walk and get out of there, but as he was walking, we were talking to him, and he just gave some very short answers to what our Q&A. I still have that on a little rusty old cassette at home, sure, waiting for it to snap. So, and then full circle from that, the time when Walter was really sick, and he did pass away, just that whole, after the announcement, and you know, his disease seemed to progress fairly quickly. I was working at Channel 2 at the time, and you know, whether the public knows this or not, a lot of places will do obituaries ahead of time, mm-hmm, on people. So it was a whole process of reaching out to people, to former teammates, and getting their approval for something so solemn, for something that would air after he would finally pass away.
Right.
And it was kind of on, we were on watch for a couple of weeks, almost around the clock, because Tim Weigel at the time, the sports director, knew, yeah, had good friends who were close to Walter, and we got a good sense of how things were progressing. And as those final days came up, we knew it was going to be just a matter of when, but exactly when was the question. So to put together what would be, you know, a 10-minute obituary on his life, in his career, to air minutes after he'd passed away,
it was a
learning experience, and you know, very grateful for those friends though who agreed beforehand, knowing what was going to happen eventually,
right,
to speak about him the way he does.
Mm-hmm.
It was really quite an undertaking.
It's a testament to you as a reporter and everybody on staff, well, because a lot of the media was doing that, yep, but also to the friends to show the character,
yeah,
of Walter,
yeah,
Payton,
and keep it under wraps too,
right,
because Walter wanted it that way,
yeah,
but just keep it under wraps, but have it ready when the moment happens.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not to copy, but you know, that was, again, the first year I was working here at the radio station, and I happened to be working the afternoon drive shift that day with Spike.
Yeah.
And that's when the news broke, and you know, regular programming went out the window at that point. So, you know, I'm in my first year trying to figure out, okay, who are we going to get on the air? Who are we going to do this? You know, Dave Ennett called and gave me some phone numbers, and we got a bunch of people that came on the air to talk. And it was just kind of very surreal to me, because I'm sitting in the studio and I'm hearing Dan Hampton and I'm hearing all these guys talk about him, thinking, okay, this was a guy that I watched growing up. And now I'm on the other side of this whole thing, and I have to actually cover this as, you know, an objective reporter slash broadcaster at this point. It was really difficult, because when I got the assignment to go to the memorial service at Soldier Field, knowing that I was going to have to get in my car and drive up to Green Bay, that very same day, it was weird. It was a very weird day, because you were choked up because you were a fan of the guy,
mm-hmm,
and you were a fan of the guy that played.
Mm-hmm.
But you were trying to stay focused because you knew you had to cover this very delicate and very important story in Chicago sports. And it was a very difficult balance to strike. And I don't even remember, we were sitting in the seats. We were surrounded by fans. I mean, we were pretty close, right, to where everybody was when we were taking in the moment. And then to be on the field, the moment that the ball got batted back, the field goal attempt got batted back by Brian Robinson, I literally had my microphone sitting out from the goal line, or from the end line, right by the pylon, and you can hear two distinct thuds: the ball hitting Ryan Longwell's foot, and the ball hitting Brian Robinson's hands. And then all heck breaking loose, because we're running out of the field because the game is over.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian Robinson saying, I felt Walter lift me up. I felt Walter. I mean, it was a really surreal 48 to 72 hours that I kind of had to pinch myself when I got back and think to myself, oh, my God. I mean, I watched this guy run like a madman all my life, and now he's passed away, and this is this huge story. And now the after effects of this whole thing are affecting this football team as well and the whole city. And I'm right at the pulse of it. I mean, I was the guy that was there reporting it back from Green Bay for this radio station.
That's why I asked the question,
yeah,
because that paints the picture, and that makes you all true sports reporters,
well,
in good times and in bad.
You have to be a news reporter, too, a lot of these,
mm-hmm,
times. When Michael Jordan's dad was murdered, I was the only person at the station that actually knew his dad, that actually had lunch with him, that spent a lot of time with him. And I was working at an all-news station. They go, sure, you got to go in there and talk about James Jordan. And it was kind of like one of those gut-wrenching things where you have to do it without the emotion.
Yeah.
And
right.
That's what's hard.
It sure erased out. Chris Bowden and Andy Mazur here. Quick break and more with them after this on WGN.
747, 720 WGN. It's Andrea and the reporters. Extension 720 with Justin Kaufman is coming up next. Andy Mazur, Chris Bowden, Cheryl Raystout, our guest tonight on the program. And as I said, Extension 720 with Justin is coming up after this. All right, I have to ask you guys, you've all covered a Bears Super Bowl, a Cubs World Series, a White Sox World Series, three Stanley Cups. You've all covered this.
Six Bulls.
Six Bulls, that's right. You were all part of that in some way, shape, or form. So, what do you want to cover next? Do you want another Super Bowl? You want another Cubs World Series? Or maybe not, maybe it's not even a Chicago story. Maybe on a national level. Is there anything? What's out there that you want to cover? A dream story?
You know, I was supposed to cover the Olympics in Calgary. I did go down the Olympics in Atlanta. And
96,
the state, yeah,
right?
I did go down there as a fan. And that was one of the best experiences you could ever have. But I was supposed to cover Calgary. And the station was sold.
Hmm.
No. And so I lost my opportunity.
Wait, a media station sold?
No.
Come on.
And I was so heartbroken because that's something I wanted to actually cover. Because after I'd been there as a fan in 96, then I really loved it. I mean, I always loved the Olympics, but being able to do it as my job was what I always wanted to do.
Okay, that's a good answer. The Olympics.
Yeah, I got a lot of things on my bucket list I want to go to and attend as a fan.
What do you want to attend as a fan?
Oh, just the big stuff, like a Masters. You know, I wouldn't mind going to see a Kentucky Derby just to see what it's like in that type of atmosphere. I've never been down to the Brickyard for Indy 500. Not that I'm a huge particular fan of those sports, but just to experience it one more time.
Yeah.
In terms of covering one more thing, hey, I've been on the Blackhawks pre and post for 2 years now, and they haven't made the playoffs. So I want to at least get
We won another Stanley Cup in Chicago.
Right. So
there you go.
I'm the whammy, but I'd like to be around those guys after experiencing it with them at so young an age to see if they could get back to that stage again further along in their careers. Not just for the satisfaction, but to see it kind of come full circle to see if they're capable of doing that. That would be a real cool story in my mind.
Yeah, and, you know, we've had the similar situation with the station of the White Sox. You know, for a couple of years, it's been building towards something. So I would definitely like to be a part of them building toward what they want to be building toward, and that's a sustained winner. And at least to get through to a playoff game, at least at this point, would be nice, especially for for those that have been around for a while covering that team since the last World Series and seeing the kind of ups and downs that they've had as a franchise, and then finally deciding to pick a direction to go in and trying to see it through. And it'd be really cool if that actually did happen.
All right, we talked about Walter Payton. We talked about Michael Jordan being exceptional athletes and great all-around people, too, especially with Walter Payton. Who do you think would epitomize the ideal Chicago athlete, male or female, just impeccable on and off the field? Good, solid.
Man, there's so many guys that come to mind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not around baseball a lot these days.
And you can say more than one.
Yeah,
you can say like
Luol Deng. If you ever knew about Luol Deng and his life and what he's done with his life, my son is 22 years old, and when he was little, he would get jerseys from a couple of people. I never bought one until I bought Luol Deng because I found out his story. I knew about him and what he has done with his life and how he has spent his money to go back to Sudan and help his former country and what he went through, the trials and tribulations his family had to go through.
Yeah.
That's somebody that I think people should really know about his past and what he's done and how important it is. He's got these camps in Britain where London took him in and his family. His father was an ambassador down in Sudan, was going to be murdered. So they ended up in London, and he's done so much. And I think that's something that when you find out somebody's beyond an athlete, that they do so much, I treasure that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who do things in the community that don't want it out there.
Right.
I haven't been around Anthony Rizzo a whole lot. But everything I see from a distance, in terms of what he does for people, especially for cancer patients, I'm really impressed by that.
Mm-hmm.
And another guy that people should start learning about if they haven't already is Robin Leonard of the Blackhawks, because he's been sober less than 2 years. There was a lot of things that led to his kind of going off the rails in his career for a while, and he got the proper help. He went into long-term rehab, and he has come out on the other side and become a real spokesman for mental health. everything, all the dots that connect to mental health in terms of the pitfalls along the way and trying to cope before you get the proper kind of help. And he's a real interesting guy, and a little different from a hockey standpoint is that he's a little bit more outspoken than the normal hockey players who come out in cliches.
he's only
6 weeks into his Blackhawks career. He's been fantastic in net so far, and since he's gotten well, he's put a message out there that's been real strong and powerful. And even though he's a subdued, low-key type of guy, he's real interesting to listen to.
That's what you want, a hero on and off.
Yeah, I got a couple of baseball players, one from each side. Anthony Rizzo, for sure, because I had a friend who lost a daughter at the age of 8 from cancer, and Rizzo's foundation was a huge, huge help to them.
Yeah.
I mean, just not only from financial support, but from comfort, where Anthony actually went out to visit her and knew about her. And it just kind of touched me because I know this person as a human being. I mean, I don't know Anthony as well. He was a rookie my first year, one of his first year in San Diego when I was out there with him, and I didn't really get to know him all that well. But the way he touched that one family that I know very well speaks volumes to the kind of person that he is. I mean, having gone through cancer himself, I mean, he had a greater appreciation for what other families go through. And to follow it up, not just with monetary, these guys make a lot of money. They're not forced. They don't have to throw money at anything.
No, they don't have to give it up.
Sounds like John Lester's another guy like that.
Well, John Lester's like that as well.
Anthony is there at the hospital.
He goes. Mm-hmm. He's present.
He does
present.
It all the time.
Oh, yeah.
He is
yeah.
present. And the other guy, is an up-and-comer, in my opinion, is Tim Anderson on the South Side. Because Tim and his wife do a lot of things that a lot of people don't know about on the South Side. He is really passionate about the city that he plays in and the side of town that he plays in. He wants to give opportunities to those who don't have it, and I think that that's admirable. I mean, again, he's got the cash. Doesn't mean you got to do it. And I think that, being able to do that after playing 162 games of baseball and on days off, he's with kids. He's, looking for housing for people. I mean, it's incredible.
Underprivileged kids, too.
Yeah.
That's his target.
Absolutely.
He took a bunch down to Kansas City to go to the Negro League museum. I mean, he is so invested in the community. And he bought a house in the South Suburbs. I mean, he's here to stay.
And these are guys you can't help to root for because of the fact that not only are they great baseball players, but they're tremendous human beings that you can get behind. I mean, there's a lot of guys that we've covered we can all agree that are not the greatest human beings. They may be great baseball players. They may be great hockey players. They may be great football players. They're somewhat hard to root for at times. But these are guys that you can really get behind. And there's a lot more of them, in my opinion, than the other.
Right. It's Andy Mazur, Cheryl Raced Out, Chris Bowden here. Quick break, and we'll be back, tell you where you can find all of these veteran, awesome sports broadcasters, and you can follow them online. You love how I keep saying that, don't you? I'll consider myself there, too. How's that? So we're all equal.
Yeah, we didn't start
footing.
Here very, very far apart, did we?
No. Keep that quiet, Mazur. More after this on WGN. Extension 720 with Justin Kaufman coming up next. Huge thanks to Curtis for booking the show. This was an awesome idea. Andy, Chris, always great to see you. Cheryl, it's a pleasure to meet you. I love hearing your stories. The main question, what bowl do we think Illinois is going to get? No, I'm kidding. No. Come on, you got to give them props, though. They're having a great season.
Well.
Yeah,
doing
all right,
well.
So where
deserve
can...
your shout out.
I got my shout out.
One of the biggest
I got my
upsets.
Little shout out.
Yeah. One of the
there
biggest
you...
upsets ever.
There you... Thank you, Cheryl. Where can we find all of you? Let's radio stations, obviously, here at Mazur.
Yeah, here at WGNRadio.com and also Twitter, Andy_Mazur1.
And can we give your website, too, for your
sure.
photographs out? Because you're so good.
AndyMazurPhoto.com.
I have three Andy Mazur photos in my home. Chris?
Blackhawks pre and post here on WGN and Twitter. I'm at Bowden Tweets.
Cheryl Ray Stout at WBEZ Radio. My Twitter handle is at C Ray Stout, RayeStout.
This has been a blast. I still want to know how you guys remember all the numbers and the stats. And what is it about that you could go back to pick a year, pick a team, and you can...
We don't when you start getting into your 50s.
Come on.
That's the only thing I really love the internet for.
Yeah, right.
And you have to, and I know we only have about 30 seconds here, but if you can quickly tell me, I always thought Chicago sports fans are the most passionate fans. And can we step back and all agree?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. To a fault sometimes.
Yeah.
That's
but that's
true.
A good thing.
Listen to Hamp and OB and yeah. Kazi
there you
afterwards.
Go.
the Scream Fest, which is passion galore.
Right. Thank you, Andy Mazur. Chris Bowden, Cheryl Raced Out. Thanks, the podcast everybody. Will be up after in about an hour or so at WGNRadio.com. As I said, Extension 720 with Justin Kaufman is coming up next. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.